Now, the Labour Party has been holding its annual conference this weekend at the Mullingar Park Hotel. We are joined on the line by the party's health spokesperson, Alan Kelly. Alan, thank you for taking our call this lunchtime. Good to talk to you. Before we talk about the Labour Party itself, I know you were particularly concerned about some of the comments of Peter Boylan in his new book and in some interviews that he made yesterday about the ethos or practice of the new National Maternity Hospital to be built on the site of St Vincent's. He says it's not entirely clear yet that that can operate without religious influence. Your thoughts on that at this point?
I find it deeply concerning. I think, in fairness to Peter, he's been out there and has spoken very clearly on this now for some time. And the fact that he is putting it out there into the domain that this isn't over the line yet is worrying because everything he says is true. This cannot be allowed to have a religious ethos. It has to be transferred to the state. And decision-making there has to be based on the requirements of women and their families, has to be done based on clinical need and not on religious ethos. So we need absolute clarity on this. It has to be, the ownership has to be transferred to the board, to the state, and we need to ensure that this happens. And if this is going to be dragging on, well, certainly as a project, we need to look at that because there can be no doubt this has to happen. I think Minister Harris needs to come out and make a fairly clear statement on when it is happening, how it is happening, and guaranteeing it is.
Well, he and the government would say that this isn't due to inaction on their part, that it's just that the different things have been sent to the Vatican and that it's been pending the Vatican's approval for a while, but that the government can't do anything to hurry that along.
Well, what will happen if the Vatican just drags its feet and doesn't bother signing it? You know, what do we do then? So we really need to consider, from a diplomatic point of view, what we can do to push this along, because it simply has to happen. So really, I suppose the government can claim it's not their role, but it is actually their role to look at all channels to get as much pressure put on to get this transferred as quickly as possible, so then that the project, much needed project, can proceed in the future.
Okay, one other thing that's in the headlines today, just before we talk about the Labour Party and its general direction, about the funding of RTE. Your party colleague, Pat Rabbit, was the first person to broach replacing the licence fee with the broadcasting charge. I think he did so back as early as January of 2012, which is almost 8 years ago now. If Labour were in power again, would you propose changing that over to a universal broadcasting charge pretty much overnight, or what would be the party's position on that?
Yeah, I think that this will have to be brought in. I think politics has probably failed this whole situation. I think a broadcasting charge is necessary and one will have to be brought in into the future. But I think, across politics, this issue, they haven't grasped this nettle, and it really does need to be dealt with. The way in which people, you know, deal with the media, watch TV, everything has changed absolutely incredibly over the last number of years. I look at my own children who are 8 and 9 years of age, and the default on RTVs now is the YouTube channel. So, the whole issue of public service broadcasting, what it is, how it is delivered to people through across different mediums and everything, all of that needs to be looked at as part of a change as well.
One parallel that's been drawn in the last couple of days when people have been talking about trying to get rid of the TV licence and introduce a universal charge like that is that people have drawn parallels with the water charges. And obviously, you know all about water charges and the political difficulties in rolling that out. Are there any lessons to be learned from how water charges went that could make a universal broadcasting charge that a little bit easier to swallow or a little bit easier to sell?
I think it's probably very different scenarios. I believe that, you know, it was always amazing to me when I was often being interviewed, people started going on about the fact that it was only 60 or 63 or 60 whatever percent of people are paying water charges after 6 to 9 months. You know, it took well over 25 years for people to pay the TV license to that level. But I think there are different scenarios. I think revenue as the collecting agent would be a very strong way of bringing this about. But it does have to happen. I mean, you can't have a situation where we expect a certain level of public service broadcasting and we're not going to fund it. So collectively, we just need to grasp that nettle.
Okay. Your thoughts on where the Labour Party is heading after the National Conference yesterday? If there was to be a general election in the next 3 to 6 months, as we expect there to be, how do you think the party is set?
I think the party is set well. I think we're very much in a different space than we've been for many years, obviously. I wrote a piece for the Examiner paper there on Friday outlining where I thought we were going and where we stood. I think because of the fact that we are concentrating on certain constituencies, I think probably the whole polling issue doesn't reflect the fact that we have a lot of strong candidates. We have a lot of new first-time candidates, young candidates. I was very taken by the amount of young people at the conference, incredibly so, the youngest age profile I've ever seen. And I've been going to conferences with my parents when I was six. I've never seen as young a profile, which is great to see. We have a lot of new young councillors as well, very articulate. Some of them run in the general election. But our focus will certainly, from an electoral point of view, be on a certain number of constituencies that we believe we can win seats.
You have seven seats at present. What would be your realistic target for the next general election?
Well, our aim would be, obviously, I don't want to get into numbers, but you know, if we could double our seats, it would be a good achievement. I mean, we certainly believe we can win seats across various different constituencies where senators are currently sitting or where prominent councillors are. And some very good other candidates as well. I think we're going to surprise people in some constituencies. I believe that there is a space for some of these people to, some of our candidates to actually come between other parties and other independents and win seats. I think the political dynamic of when the election is called and how it's called and the way in which we finally get that slow bicycle race to the election will play a part in this. I think people are coming back towards the Labour Party as you know, as a party that you know has always put the people first. I think we've obviously a swath of different policies that we've put out there, and you know I believe that we can be successful. Having said that, your next question would probably be: will we go into government in that scenario?
Well, that was going to be my next question. Yes, because I said there are some people who still think that although Labour obviously felt very demoralised after 2016 and you were reduced from 37 TDs to 7, there would still be some, and I think I might be among them, who would say that Labour may have been better served using that mandate to try and get itself into power, because at the very least, when you're outside of power, you're in a very crowded opposition field where it's harder to get your message across. Where at the very least, you and the six other Labour TDs that were elected in 2016 were elected on the premise of going back into government with Fine Gael and finishing the job that you'd started.
That's a very fair argument, and I've heard it myself and I've debated it myself. I suppose when it comes to the next election, the way I look at it, I believe if you have an opportunity to go into government in many scenarios, you should do so, because you know I'm one of these TDs who, you know, you get elected and it's a privilege and honour to be elected if I am elected in Tipperary. But also, you know, you want to implement your policies. That's why you're in government. That's why you're in politics.
So was it a mistake then not to go in 3.5 years ago?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I don't think really that was an option at the time. But as regards the future, I believe in, I don't want to be, or I don't believe the Labour Party ever will be one of these parties that, you know, will always shout from the sidelines, will always be in opposition for opposition's sake. I don't think that's a credible position for those who adopt that kind of stance. But having said that, we do need to have a critical mass. We need to have a critical mass to be able to negotiate a program for government where basically our five red lines, which Brendan outlined yesterday, will be met and honoured. And in that scenario, if we don't have enough TDs, we will not be in a position to do that and we won't be able to do that. So we'll have to rebuild from that position. If we do get the critical mass of TDs, well then, and we can negotiate with whichever of Tweedledum and Tweedledee comes ahead in the election, well then, obviously, we will look at that and see if we can progress it.
Is one of the five red lines the refusal to allow the retirement age be raised beyond 66? Because that was one of the issues that seems to be gathering a lot of headlines in the wake of yesterday's conference. Is that a red line for Labour?
We have five areas where we've made commitments, and yesterday Brendan outlined that as one as well. And certainly it's something that we believe very strongly in.
Now, was it not Joan Burton herself who introduced that law that raised those ages, that she was responsible for the Pensions Act in 2011?
Well, she was responsible for the Pensions Act. However, I mean, Gavin, you're not comparing apples with apples, oranges with oranges. We were forced to do an awful lot of things at those times because we literally didn't have a bob. And now our circumstances have changed and we believe in reflecting that in policy if we were in government.
But if your suggestion is that the Troika made you do it, the Troika always said they didn't mind what the individual measures were as long as the bottom line worked out.
Well, if you have a small menu of options, Gavin, in front of you when you're left in the most difficult scenario any government has been left in ever, well, then you have very few options, really. So the circumstances are very much different now. So we certainly believe that the retirement age should not be changed to that.
Is it not an example, and I take your argument, and then it's a reasonable point, but do you think that people are prepared to see that distinction, that they are prepared to understand Labour making the case that times were different 5 years ago or whenever it was, when originally in 2011 people elected Labour sort of on the premise of trying to blunt the edges of austerity and not, as ultimately was perceived, as helping to facilitate it instead?
And we did blunt the edges of austerity. We did exactly what you said. We reversed the minimum wage, for example, which was a disgraceful act by Fianna Fáil and the Greens in the previous government. So we did blunt the edges. But listen, Gavin, it was the most impossible time for any government in the history of the state financially. And I suppose we're just going to have to keep explaining the differential. And that's the job of politics. But like, unless you're in that scenario, and trust me, I know I was there. I got the file when I was in government to read as regards where our financial state was. And it wasn't good. It was absolutely terrible. And that's the scenario we're in. And there were the cards we had to play. It's a total different scenario now, down to many hard decisions that were actually made by the Labour Party in government. Difficult economic decisions. But we had to ensure we protected core payments and social welfare. We brought back the minimum wage. We brought in a raft of legislation to protect workers and a range of other things. Obviously, we are to the fore. No other party has any track record of changing social Ireland like the Labour Party has. So we did a huge amount as well.
There was a time not too long ago when you said that you were going to put your party leader, Brendan Howland, on notice. How is your standing with him now?
Very good. Well, we have an excellent working relationship. As you know, Gavin, I spend a huge amount of time dealing with my health portfolio. I also deal with a whole range of other issues across other portfolios, working with my colleagues. I'm also involved in, obviously, in the Public Accounts Committee. And so I'm very busy and doing everything I can to help us to be as electorally as successful as we can.
Did anything change with your relationship with Brendan Howland after you'd said that?
Yeah, I think an awful lot of things changed. I think our working relationship has improved dramatically. I think collectively as a unit, our parliamentary party, I think a lot of people can even see this, our parliamentary party has come together and worked really strong as a team. I think with the involvement of people from, we say, who are prominent candidates / councillors around the country, pushing them forward as well has helped because we have a very small team. Every one of us, our week in Leinster House, are extremely busy running and racing to do as much as possible to try and cover as much as possible. So I think all of that has meant that we're in a much better space.
Whether it is after the next election or at some other point in the future, would you still like to lead the Labour Party?
Yes, I've consistently said that. Whenever that point comes, if I am elected by the people of Tipperary and I get the opportunity, I will put my name forward. But, obviously we don't know when that will be. But, I think it's good to have ambition. And I think it's obviously something that I've said before and I'll continue to do. I'm in the Labour Party all my life. It is, along with family, it is my life. And, I believe that the party has a huge amount to offer. I believe in, I believe in work. I believe in the value of work. I believe in protecting people. I believe that we need to ensure that people who go out and do an honest day's work for an honest day's pay are respected. I don't believe society we have where so many people are basically working to live instead of living, that their actual lifestyle is so taken up with getting in and out of work, worrying about all the difficulties as regards mortgages, as regards childcare, as regards insurance and everything like that. That's not a society that I want to live in. I said yesterday that what galls me and what turns my stomach is all the times, and it's coming up regularly now, I hear private hospitals advertising for the public to come to them as if they have a unique, differential and better healthcare provision than anyone else. And that society is bred by this government, and I don't want that society. I want a more equal society. I want a society that will offer young people opportunities and give them opportunities to go on in life.
But in the meantime, before you get that opportunity, Brendan Howland is the right man to lead your campaign against that society.
Brendan has made a fantastic speech last night, and Brendan is going to lead us into the next election. But let's be honest about this. We're a very small team, so collectively, together, we're all playing my part in the leadership of the party.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Labour Party spokesperson on health, Alan Kelly, TD, thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime.